Hello and welcome back to the Unsprawling Podcast, a podcast about Calgary's built environment and how we get around it. This is another special episode. This is episode 9 of the public hearing recap. I think we finished day 10 yesterday. We're recording this morning because I figure sleep is maybe a little bit important. I'm trying to stay up till 2 a.m. a little less these days. But this has been quite the marathon, and I've got a great panel to discuss it with us here today. We've got Enam with us.
Hey, Alex. Great to be here.
And we've got Catherine Davies back as well.
Hi, great to be back.
And joining us for the first time is Andrea. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So this is going to be kind of interesting. We had quite a few interesting speakers yesterday, and I think a few that really stood out to us. Catherine, we'll start with you. Who was your kind of highlighted speaker you had?
So the speaker that I really enjoyed was the Anglican priest, and he's the priest at the Cathedral Church of the Redeemer downtown. Unfortunately, I can't remember his name, but fun fact, I used to play the organ at that church, and I'm not an Anglican, but it was a really like warm, charitable, compassionate faith community there. So I was really interested to hear what he had to say. And he had an interesting framing. He said, I'm from Saskatchewan. I'm a property owner. He was very, very keen on property rights and personal freedom. But he used that to frame his argument in favor of zoning reform. And he tied it to the fact that, you know, in Calgary, we all are concerned. I think he said we're all ashamed of our homelessness problem. And he said, why not empower property owners to be able to contribute to solving that problem by creating more housing? So I thought it was a very well put together, compassionate, thoughtful presentation. And I was grateful that he spoke up.
Yeah. I really enjoyed his presentation, though. At the beginning, when he's saying, I'm a taxpayer, I'm a property owner, the way he emphasized it, I was like, okay, where's he going? Where's he going? And then, you know, he brought it together. Andrea, what about you? Who was your highlighted speaker, and what did you get out of it?
My highlighted speaker was a person on the north side. Late in the evening, a lady by the name of Sarah Popowich, who owned a property in Bowness, who was living and described the impact of having a fourplex built next door to her property and how emotionally it affected her use and enjoyment of her property. So and the reason I point her out is because we talk about housing as shelter and how important it is for people to move forward with their lives, but the house is also a home. It's where your memories take place. It's where things happen to your children, your pets, and she described all this stuff and how she feels that she's losing that. And so I thought it was an important perspective to hear for everyone to hear on both sides of the issue, and it was impactful. And it would be nice for her to get together with someone who is equally impacted on the yes side, someone who is living with the emotional and psychological impact of not having a home. And I think when people like that get together, the empathy will cause people to actually see the other side and come up with solutions that could possibly satisfy both.
Yeah, I think that's excellent. And I think throughout this conversation, as we've heard people on both sides, there have been a lot of great solutions that have been proposed and brought up in order. Because I think at this point, most people feel like this is going to happen. Lots of other cities in Canada and the US have already done this. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of how are we going to do it and how are we going to make it work for the people who live here? So, yeah, I appreciated that one as well. Enam, what about you? Who was your highlight?
And maybe this is just because I'm a public policy grad, but I really enjoyed Dylan Rama's presentation, and he's from the School of Public Policy in Calgary. And I thought he did a really good job of kind of first walking through the economics of the issue and talking about how, you know, before we're even able to lower rental prices, we need to make sure that they rise at a slower rate than they're currently rising at. And, you know, things that we do now will help slow the rise, and that's important and that's valuable. And so even if things get slightly less affordable, it's happening at a much more stable rate. And I thought that was a really important piece for council to hear. And then he talked about his own kind of journey with change, with how an empty lot that he used to play in got turned into a gas station, and how he was kind of initially distraught as a kid. And then he learned to appreciate the fact that he could buy candy at the corner store. And, you know, bringing it back to this idea that this change is inevitable and our communities are not static. And then kind of posing that question of, should we be spending our time fighting change, or should we be spending our time adapting to it? And I thought that that, you know, really brought together a lot of the things that I was feeling and thinking. And so I really appreciated the way that Dylan conveyed that to council.
Yeah. I think we all enjoyed his presentation. And it's come up multiple times about that slope of change, about that slope of the increasing costs. I know Willem also brought it up, Klumpenhauer, in his presentation about, you know, hey, we want it to go up less steeply. If we can get it going from this to this, that's a win. And we've talked about it before, this RCG upzoning, this is a long-term strategy. If this passes, we will not wake up in the morning and suddenly all our rents and mortgages will be affordable, but this is a long-term strategy that will benefit, you know, my kids someday, right? And my grandkids. And that's what this is about. It's not about us today. It's about everyone else tomorrow. So with that, let's get into kind of our discussion here. We wanted to talk about non-market housing, and I want Enam to kind of lead the discussion with this one. Can you tell us what your observations have been about non-market housing throughout this conversation?
Sure. So non-market housing is, for anyone who doesn't know, is housing that falls on the continuum of housing that is government supported. So be that through governments paying nonprofits to offer discounted rents, governments directly subsidizing individuals to lower their rents, or, you know, anything that provides that rental assistance to individuals. And, you know, Calgary's percentage of our housing stock that's non-market is, you know, anywhere from 2.5 to 3.1% are the estimates. That's below the Canadian average, which is about half of the OECD average. And the Canadian average is about a quarter of countries that are leading the way in non-market housing, like, you know, Scandinavian countries, a couple other European countries. And so, you know, Calgary has a huge shortage of non-market housing to begin with. And this is something that a lot of the people who talk about housing affordability have been like yelling about for years. Like, we have had more non-housing market units go offline over the past decades than new ones being built, because we're not investing enough in maintaining these properties. They don't get the funding to do the maintenance, and so they run into disrepair issues. And so we've been losing non-market housing, and, you know, a lot of people who've really been invested in this issue have been kind of ringing the alarm on this for years, but I've never seen so many people come out and say, yes, we need more non-market housing, than I have these last 2 weeks. And it seems like there's, you know, from particularly from the no side, that there's these people who are really willing to champion non-market housing solution. Perhaps they're thinking of it as an alternative to upzoning. But I take a yes and approach, and I think, you know, the energy around non-market housing that I've seen this week has been really, you know, great.
Yeah. It's been awesome to see that that conversation shift. Now we can only hope that conversation kind of keeps going after this is through or not through, after this conversation has wrapped up on this public hearing. Hopefully we can keep talking about non-market housing and non-market solutions to this. But I want to know, like, is this just people kind of trying to find a way to keep things the way that it is, to keep, because they're afraid of the RCG upzoning? Is this just a way for them to, you know, offer some sort of alternative to get away from it? Andrea, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I totally agree that is part of the motivation behind that support. I would love to believe that there's an awakening of minds and a growth of altruism, but there's an element of self-interest in there, right? I can either change my neighborhood or support something that doesn't change my neighborhood. So if this contributes to solving the problem but doesn't impact me, human nature is what it is, and there you get support. Now, use this and leverage it and go and get the funding that you're going to need, and then you're going to have a different conversation when people realize, hey, it's not costing me in terms of loss of my property value or whatever other argument, but now I got to contribute this in a form of higher taxes, perhaps, right? And yeah. So we see if that support changes when you look at the other side of the equation, which is, how do we fund this? How do we make that happen? You're all for the non-market housing, but you got to make it a reality, and that requires dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have been shocked by how many people on the no side have been begging and begging and begging for higher taxes, because they've been asking for non-market housing. They've been asking for more sprawl, which costs a lot in infrastructure costs, and which we talked about a couple episodes ago on this recap. And they've been asking for all of these things that it's like, that costs money. That costs the city, the province, the federal government, that costs us money. And this is a really, really simple way to just kind of unrestrict things a little bit and say, you know what, let's have a little bit more variety in the market, a few more options for a few more people, and to take advantage of existing infrastructure that can handle the growth. Because if you have to extend the pipe down that way, you're going to have to make it bigger down this way anyways. So I think those are really important considerations to make. Now, we also heard a lot about this targeted upzoning. You know, don't do it in my neighborhood. This is kind of the same mentality of like, oh, I don't want my neighbor's property to be changed. I don't want my property to be changed. So let's maybe find some gray field, some brownfield development somewhere and do something with that, which I say yes and. But a lot of people have been saying just do it targeted upzoning. Do it around transit stations. Do it somewhere else because it won't affect me there. Catherine, what do you think about targeted upzoning? What effect do you think that would have? And why is this quilted upzoning maybe a little bit better of an idea?
So if you can remember back to, I think it was last Wednesday, when I presented to council, and I mean, who can remember that far back? And no one remembers what I said anymore. But I talked a bit about my community. So we have had some city-led upzoning about 10 years ago. And so there are about 600 parcels of land in Banff Trail that are zoned RCG. And so you could say we spot zoned Banff Trail. And what we've seen is that there's been some development pressure on our neighborhood compared to other neighborhoods, you know, in the vicinity with same access to transit and amenities. And Banff Trail has certainly become a really popular spot to develop. So property values have gone up in Banff Trail, especially on corner lots. They've heated up relative to these other neighborhoods. And Andrea made a really good comment just before we started recording this, that the reason that the property value goes up is that it has some added value relative to the properties surrounding it. And so it's like Beyonce. Beyonce is so successful because she sings the way she does. And if everybody could sing like Beyonce, then she wouldn't have the wealth and the fame that she has, because why would you pay to see Beyonce when you can just listen to anyone else? I didn't articulate that as well as Andrea did, but there's certainly a land lift when it's targeted, when it's restricted. And if you take those restrictions away, and if you put all properties on a level playing field, you won't see that land lift.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was David White from Civic Works the other night who did a really, really good job of illustrating how many properties will be suitable for the maximum amount of density. I think his estimate was that there's 216,000 properties in the city that would be upzoned by this. Remember, 67% of the city is already zoned RC1. And that is a blanket zoning. That is a one-size-fits-all solution that we've had for decades. And now we're talking about opening up a little bit more opportunity. But then once you trickle down, kind of figure out, well, this one is close to transit, so that's easier to put the max density there. This one is a corner lot, so that one's easier, right? All of these little factors. There's about 10,000 properties in the city. But if you have to go through and individually upzone each of those properties one by one by one, you're going to find bidding wars. You know, you're going to find these increases in what developers are willing to pay for those properties. But if you just say, hey, yeah, it's just all over the city now, you don't have to go through the upzoning process, so it's already, that's already a done deal. We benefit greatly from that kind of vast uplift. Inam, what about you? Like, tell me a little bit about what you've seen about the targeted upzoning conversation.
Yeah, I think it's a really important conversation to have, particularly because it's being used very frequently among speakers at the hearing. I know I think it's the Calgary Real Estate Board had a whole presentation about this idea of land lift from upzoning, and they had examples of plots in Calgary that were upzoned and saw like a 35% increase in land value. And they also made reference to a fairly popular and famous study in Chicago that showed that they upzoned on nodes and corridors, and they found that land values increased pretty significantly in Chicago. The problem is that a lot of people are extrapolating these spot upzoning land value lifts to apply to something like blanket upzoning, which is a broad upzoning. And spot upzoning does not have the same effect as broad upzoning. And there's pretty good academic literature on this. But it follows the basic economic theory of scarcity. Like Catherine mentioned with, Beyonce's voice being special, that's why people will pay so much to see her. If the, RCG zoning is special, then developers will pay a premium for it. However, if RCG is common, then you don't see that, insane land lift costs that people are talking about in terms of the land value soaring because of the scarcity of that zoning ability. So I think, the conflation between spot upzoning and broad upzoning is really plaguing the discourse.
Go ahead, Catherine.
Can I jump in on that?
Yeah.
So I've noticed, Inam mentions that there is some good data, some good academic consensus on what happens when you do blanket upzoning or quilt upzoning. And a lot of people point to Auckland, you can point to Minneapolis. I've seen some really interesting treatments of those two cities. And what has kind of bothered me through a lot of this is that there's been this idea that Auckland has been a failure and Minneapolis was a failure. And I mean, that's just simply not true. Like, we're veering into just, sorry to say it, but there have been some lies told about this. And the data on Auckland doesn't necessarily say it's an incredible success, but it's pretty robust and it's pretty supportive of the policy. I don't know if any of you caught it, but Robert Falconer from the School of Public Policy, who's also a doctoral fellow at the London School of Economics, he called in from the UK specifically to talk about Auckland and how it has been successful. Auckland itself has indicated that they, or New Zealand has indicated that they will look at expanding this throughout New Zealand. Minneapolis is really important. It was one of the first cities in North America to do this, and it hasn't been a failure. It's been held up by bad faith litigation through spurious environmental law, and few people have mentioned Austin, a city that really took bolder steps than Calgary is considering taking. And it has seen rents fall. Like, they've seen a ton of new housing being built and they have seen rents fall. I saw a great headline that said something about how this is a disaster for landlords. And I was like, that's really too bad. But like, it kind of highlighted that prices come down when you build a lot of housing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so hopefully we can build a lot of housing with this happening here. I want to get your guys' vibes as we kind of get into the end of this. We're recording this Friday morning, and we're thinking the public hearing part of this might be over today, if not, almost certainly Monday, I would think. And so I want to hear from you guys how you're feeling about this. Are we optimistic? What are we expecting to see over the next week? We'll start with Andrea. What are you feeling going into the end of the tunnel?
I'm optimistic that I think council recognizes that something needs to be done both on the non-market side and the market side. How they're going to, what they're going to come up with is going to be partly a policy discussion, but it's also going to become a political discussion, right? And the big question mark is how much are they going to keep it a policy discussion, or how much, or are they going to drag it all into the political discussion? Yeah. And that's going to be up to council, you know, to, and primarily on the mayor to keep the team on track. Right. So I think something will come out of it, and you have to take that as a win. Yeah. However small it is, because the door is opened now, right? Yeah. And then there's opportunity to refine it and say, okay, we thought it was going to go this way. It's not. But you have to start with the concept of we need to change from the status quo, mm-hmm. and then build on that.
Yeah.
So take the small win, even if it is small, and continue to work. So this isn't going to be the end. It's really just the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's always something more to do. And I think you're right about whatever way this goes, whatever we get at the end of this, because I think we will get something. At the very least, there will be some progress made. And that's a win. And then we keep pushing for the next thing. We've also opened the door to the conversation on non-market housing so much more than we have before. We've opened the door on transit-oriented development more than we have before. And I think there's a long list of people that we might be able to hold accountable when they inevitably fight against transit-oriented development in their area. We can say, hey, do you remember when you said, yes, we need to do this actually? And so I'm optimistic about that, but we'll have to keep pushing. Inam, what about you? How are you feeling?
A mix of emotions, but I'll highlight one, and that's kind of inspired by how many people care about their communities. I think, you know, yes and no, people are very, very, like, community-oriented, and that's a great thing for our city. My challenge is to get people to expand their idea of community. Because I think a lot of people think of their community as just the people that look like them, talk like them, live next to them in the same type of house. And it's great that they have that idea of community, but you know, I challenge everyone to think of your community not just as those people who you regularly interact with, but your community should include everyone who comes after you, everyone who could live with you, and everyone in our city, in reality. I think that the best way to move forward as a city is to have this broad sense of what my community can be and who I'm in community with. Because the broader we think about our community, the more likely it is to include those who are vulnerable, those who need a helping hand, and those who are going to come after us, the younger people, the future generations. And if we can get everyone to care about a broad sense of community, you know, the building blocks are there. People do have a deep sense of community. So let's just expand that a little bit and I'll feel real good.
Yeah, I really agree. I think we're getting there and we're moving in a great direction. Catherine, what about you? How do you feel?
So I'm trying to feel optimistic. I will say that it's been a hard 2 weeks, and I think anyone who has been following this has experienced a lot of, it's been a lot of emotional labor to be involved in this and invested in this. And it's been exhausting for me. I cannot imagine how tough it has been for the people around that horseshoe and for the admin staff supporting them. And, I think say what you like about any of the counselors sitting up there. I think they're doing a good job and I think they're doing their best. I don't know exactly how it will play out. My sense is that it will pass. I've heard that there are some amendments coming, and so we'll see if it gets watered down to the point that it's, you know, not really very useful at all. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But I do think it's been an important conversation, and I think it's something that it'll take Calgary maybe a long time to come to terms with a lot of things that have been said over the past 2 weeks. And I do think it has opened the doors to some further conversation, I hope. So I hope we can capitalize on this experience and try to have something good come out of it. One comment that I keep coming back to is, this is something I discussed with a university student during the housing strategy hearing in September. And he had written a letter, and at the end of the letter it said, "Who is this city for?" And I think that for a long time, we haven't thought too much about that. You know, the city is for homeowners. The city is for, you know, people who are doing well. And I think it's been eye-opening for a lot of us to realize just how diverse our city is, how diverse in terms of socioeconomic disparity and a lot of other factors. And I think it's important that we ask, who is this city for, and can we make room for everyone?
Yeah. And one thing that gives me some hope and optimism moving forward is the number of people from different backgrounds who have come out to speak in favor of this. We've had international students, we've had people from a variety of social organizations, of nonprofit organizations, and professional organizations who have come out to speak in favor of this. And a lot of just people who care about this city. And so I'm pretty optimistic about the future here and what we're going to get. Before I wrap it up and close us out for this ninth recap episode, does anybody have any final thoughts that you want to slip in before we end?
To tie up what everybody just said, and you know, we talk about communities, and I ended my presentation, like I said, many, many panels ago. I was panel 33, so long forgotten. So I want to bring this back. I closed my presentation with this sentence, that in the fight to protect the character of our neighborhoods, we risk losing the character of our city. And we need to keep that foremost in our minds. To me, a person who's 60 years old, born and raised Calgarian, lived here most of my life, this city has always been defined by one word: opportunity. And if we don't do this, we risk losing that, and we become a city of privilege. And that is, for me, the wrong way to go. Yeah. So I hope this conversation that all these Calgarians have had opens that up and say, yes, our communities are important. They're vital. But so's our city. And we can't ignore that just for the sake of protecting one or more communities.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think that's a great way to end this recap. So thanks for joining me, guys. And we will be back tomorrow with another recap of this public hearing.